If you'll open your Bible with me to the 36th chapter of Ezekiel, we're going to be looking at Israel's land tonight. Not the people, but Israel's land. If you recall, among the other charges that were made against Israel for their dispersion, one specific charge was that they had defiled the land. And as we have seen already, at the time of Israel's absence from the land, it became barren, desolate, and the cities laid waste. The first 15 verses of the 36th chapter of Ezekiel are not addressed to the people of Israel, but they are addressed to the land of Israel. And this is what we'll be dealing with tonight. There are a few things you should keep in mind as we look at this. First of all, you should bear in mind that these prophecies were uttered approximately 2,500 years ago. You should also bear in mind that they were addressed to the land before Israel was dispersed from it throughout the nations. They were, of course, in Babylon at the time, the land of the Chaldees, but they came back to the land after this, at least a remnant of the people did. But this prophecy was uttered prior to their dispersion among the nations of the earth. And yet these prophecies specifically addressed to the land command the land to do specific things when Israel returns from the dispersion. If you'll look first with me at verse 11, chapter 36 and verse 11, there's an interesting thing here about Israel's return to the land and the resettling of it. God says, "And I will multiply upon you man and beast, and they shall increase and bring fruit, and I will settle you after your old estates. I'll do better unto you than at your beginnings, and ye shall know that I'm the Lord. And I will settle you after your old estates." The land of Israel, as it has been occupied by the 12 tribes up to this point, is made up primarily of a range of mountains down the center, with Mount Carmel about 23, 24 miles long, jutting out into the Mediterranean Sea. A coastal plains area, the coastal plain of Philistia, Sharon, and Acre, and then the plain of Megiddo that lies between Mount Carmel and the mountain range, and the Jordan Valley with the Negev on the south, and that is Israel. Most of the cities of Israel were located either along the coastal plain area or in what's known as the Shephelah, which was a low hill country between the plain and the mountain range. And it's interesting to note that even in the mountain range, these cities are being reestablished by their ancient names. The city of Ashdod that completely disappeared has been rebuilt by its original name. Ashkelon is still Ashkelon. Jericho is still Jericho. The site of Caesarea is still called Caesarea. Jerusalem is still Jerusalem. And so it goes. On the book that many of you have purchased that have some of these lectures in it, these emblems on the front are not there just for decoration. The top emblem with the candelabrum on it is the emblem of the new nation of Israel. This is what is known as the menorah. It is a replica of the candelabrum that was taken from the temple by the Romans when Titus destroyed the city in 70 AD. The Star of David centers the national flag of Israel today, a blue star on a field of white, the Star of David. The shield emblazoned on it, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, stands in the city hall in Jerusalem today. The Ministry of Tourism has as its emblem Caleb and Joshua bearing the great cluster of grapes that they bore back as the faithful spies when they came to spy out the land. And so the old emblems and the old locations and the old Judea is still Judea, Samaria is still Samaria, Galilee is still Galilee. I will settle you according to your old estate. Means just exactly what it says. If you look now in verse 10, and I will multiply men upon you, all the house of Israel, even all of it, and the city shall be inhabited, and the waste shall be builded. And you'll find also in verses 34 and 38 this same matter emphasized. As we have already seen, many of these cities were destroyed. But the prophet says that the waste places shall be rebuilt. Since I mentioned Ashdod a while ago, it completely disappeared from the face of the earth. Nothing but sand dunes were where Ashdod one time stood on the Mediterranean coast. Since the Six-Day War, within the last 10, 15 years at least, the city of Ashdod has been rebuilt in this location. In 1968, it was a city of about 20,000 people. Today, it's a city of better than 80,000 people with the biggest man-made harbor on the eastern Mediterranean coast for the purpose of import and export, primarily exporting agricultural products out of the Negev. Ashkelon has been rebuilt and has become a resort city. Jerusalem, its skyline is changing and it is expanding just as fast as they can build. Within the last few years, it has jumped from a city of 300,000 to above a 500,000 people. Tel Aviv is a new city with Joppa as a suburb. And the metropolitan area of Tel Aviv today is a metropolitan area of 750,000 people. Haifa is a new city. It's the industrial muscle of the land of Israel today. Many of the Jews that came to Haifa came from Germany, and it's an industrial city of a 500,000 people also that was originally built on the slope of Mount Carmel down toward the port of Haifa that has now flown clear over the summit of Mount Carmel and down the west side toward the Mediterranean Sea. And so city after city has been and is being rebuilt that had become waste and had been destroyed in the absence of Israel. I will rebuild you according to your old estate, and the waste places shall be rebuilt. And that is exactly what is taking place in the land of Israel today. But let's look even further than this. Something to me that is more amazing, more startling than the cities being rebuilt and the names being retained, retaining their ancient identity. Look in verses 8 and 9 and 11, if you will. Now remember, God is speaking to the land, not to people, to the land of Israel. But ye, O mountains of Israel, ye shall shoot forth your branches and yield your fruit to my people of Israel, for they are at hand to come. The timing is clear. As God brings Israel back to the land is commanded to produce and to feed the people. For behold, I am for you, and I will turn unto you, and ye shall be tilled and sown. And verse 11, I will multiply upon you man and beast. They shall increase and bring forth fruit, and I will settle you after your old estates, and so on as we read a while ago. Look also in the 34th chapter of Ezekiel, and verse 13. God says, and I will bring them out from the people, and gather them from the countries, and will bring them to their own land, and feed them upon the mountains of Israel by the rivers, and in all the inhabited places of the country. There can be no mistaking that this is a clear command to the land spoken 2,500 years ago, that when Israel is regathered to the land and reestablished in the land, that land must respond and produce to feed the people. that have been brought back to it under the hand of God. In fact, if you'll read the first verses of this 36th chapter of Ezekiel, you'll find God speaking to the mountains and to the rivers and to the valleys and to the desolate waste, and commanding them to be reestablished and to produce again. Now you say, well, is that what the land is doing today? Well, let me share with you, don't take my opinion, let me share with you what newspaper clippings and releases show is taking place in that land today. The Director General of the Ministry of Agriculture said that most countries were achieving an average growth of only 1.7%. He reported that Samaria and Judea boasted an annual agriculture production growth of 36% beginning between 1968 and 1974, and that in the Gaza Strip it has been 25.4% when the national average is 1.7%. You know, the agricultural output of the administered, what Israel calls the administered territories, the area that was taken during the Six-Day War, according to this release, since 1967, has increased an amazing 500%. Now, it didn't do that when it wasn't in the hands of Israel. But since the Six-Day War, when that land has come into the hands of Israel and is administered by the people of Israel, production has increased 500%. Israel exported polished gem diamonds for a volume of $428 million during the period of January to August in 1976, or 22.1% more than during January to August the year before. Israel now occupies a foremost place in the world insofar as book publishing and printing is concerned. Agricultural production in Israel has been increasing by 7.5% per year, four times higher than the international average. Here is an interesting item. You remember the Holocaust took place in Germany. 6 million Jews were slain there and had much to do with the demand for a place in their homeland. This release in 1976 came from Bonn, Germany. Since last week, over 100 tons of fresh vegetables, fruits, and flowers from Israel are being landed daily at Bonn Cologne Airport in the heart of populous northwest Germany, the result of an agreement considered a milestone for Israel farm exports. Now look, friend, we're talking about a piece of ground that could be put in Southern California. And we're talking about a land that didn't produce enough to feed the people that were there when Israel came back. And yet now they are exporting and feeding the land that sought to destroy them during the Holocaust. Israeli avocados, melons, onions, strawberries, tomatoes, celery, dates, peppers, roses, gladiolus, carnations, and other agricultural products now have direct air access to markets in the nearby industrial Ruhr district and to the Rhine Valley. And so the thing goes. I ask you, are the mountains responding to the command of God 2,500 years ago? Georgia isn't the only place that has peanuts, even if they have moved them into the White House. This item from Tel Aviv. With Mr. Carter's election has come a new interest in peanuts, and Israel has a flourishing peanut industry. In a crop of 20,000 tons, some 12,000 tons were sold abroad, bringing $10 million in recent months. Isn't that like Jacob? We get a peanut president, and peanut business goes up in Jacob's territory. But the land is responding. Incidentally, poultry business is booming in Israel now. Colonel Sanders has gone kosher, and you can get Kentucky Fried Chicken in Israel today within the last 12 months. The only difference in what you buy there and what you buy here, it has to be kosher there, but it's still Kentucky Fried Chicken. Since Israel became a state 29 years ago, 30 now, Over 130 million new trees have been planted. Reforested areas now total 130,000 acres. They serve in soil conservation, recreation, shelter belts, and add natural beauty to that land. The potato and other vegetables grow so plentifully in Israel that European markets are helping promote Israel's farm products at such a pace that Israel could well become the breadbasket for Europe. Can you believe it? Germany alone is demanding every potato Israel can grow. Celery is another choice food export. Last year, 700 tons of celery were exported. It is expected that 8,000 tons will be sold this year. You can hear that celery chomp for a long way. The lush orchards, which grow in much of what was once desert country, which today grow in an arid valley where no more than 1 inch of rain falls every year, receive no additional irrigation. Listen to this. The fields, however, have been brought back to life after more than 2,000 years by inquisitive Israeli scientists who have unraveled the technological secrets of water collection and storage used by earlier civilizations. And so what went on in Bible times, they have discovered the secret and are making it produce again with 1 inch of rainfall a year. I don't know what the cotton production is there now, but in 1971, there was 117,000 bales of cotton produced in Israel. And I'm sure that that has gone up since that time. Here is an item that is headed red gold. Most of the off-season strawberries in Europe come from an Arab village, Tara, 18 miles from Tel Aviv in Israel. Tara is referred to by the Israelis as Strawberryville, has the highest income per capita of any non-petroleum Arab region in the Middle East. And so the strawberry business goes. The strawberries were ripe when the Yom Kippur War came along, and of course, when war breaks loose in Israel, all the vehicles are drafted and the people are drafted, and they had strawberries ripe, and it looked like they were not going to be able to get them to market. But this item is headed, war or no war, the strawberries got through. We sold 165 million flowers abroad with a turnover of 12 3/10 millions of dollars FOB. The avocado season ended with a 20% increase in sales. The prices were good. Strawberry sales this year came to 4,100 tons. That's a lot of strawberry jam for a little country like Israel. The flower exports in Israel are flourishing, and it's astounding. Flower exports are blooming and prices are very good. The fastest growing branch in agriculture export today is supposed to be the flowers that are produced in Israel. They expect to export about 480 million flowers and earn about $50 million within this year, 1978. And so flowers themselves are bringing money into the land of Israel again. And here is an interesting, you remember Libya is not the greatest friend Israel has. In fact, Gaddafi would like nothing better than to wipe them off the face of the earth. And yet, a recent sale of thousands of olive tree saplings went reportedly to Libya from Israel to get the olive trees, to wave the olive branch. They had to get them from Israel, so they swallowed their pride and did it in secret. A lot of countries want the oranges that come from Israel, but they don't want the name of Israel on them. So Israel accommodates and ships the boxes unmarked to countries that are biased against Israel but still want their fruit. And so the production goes. The agricultural exports, we're talking about 1976 now, agricultural exports grew by 40% last year to $300 million. And let's just take a look at some of the things that are listed. Our Jewish farmers have yielded first place in production of celery for export and domestic use, and scallions. Israel's Arab farmers are now in the lead and have established a world record in growing these two crops. In fact, average yields per dunham are 5% above those of California's top vegetable growers. I'm sorry, but that's what the paper says. California has dropped behind Israel in the production of celery and scallions. Commercial aviation will gross $250 million this year, 1976, $40 million more than last year, according to their transportation minister. Now, we're talking about a nation that's 30 years old. Commercial aviation that has been under the gun, literally, from the day its first plane flew, is yet showing a $250 million gross profit in 1 year. Over 60% of Israel's total land mass is desert. The vast area stretching south from Beersheba to the shore of the Red Sea though rich in mineral resources, is still almost totally undeveloped and unsettled. Now, I hope you caught the impact of this. And let's go back to Ezekiel. Ezekiel says, "But ye, O mountains of Israel, ye shall shoot forth your branches and yield your fruit to my people Israel, for they are at hand to come." I think you can see that that's exactly what's happening. And yet, with this small country, over 60% of it is desert and still almost totally undeveloped and unsettled, which means 40% of that little country has done all of this stuff we've been talking about. What about the Dead Sea? Well, the potash plant at the Dead Sea already produces 1.2 million ton per year. That was in 1976. I was told by one of the men there in Israel that they export 1 million tons of potash a year, not counting what they use as a base for their own fertilizers. The bromide plant is able to produce all the bromide used especially in pesticides that the world will need in the coming 3,500 years. The area is also very rich in magnesium. More than 1,000 people suffering from psoriasis from Scandinavia are expected in the region this year, and 3,300 in 1977. And on that score, here is an interesting thing about the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea waters, in which a woman floated, and the climate of the area have undisputed therapeutic characteristics that defy the understanding of modern medical researchers. An estimated 50,000 visitors to the Dead Sea last year sought relief from rheumatic, arthritic, cardiac, respiratory, and skin diseases. By the end of 1977, there were already 4 major hotels in the area and other forms of accommodation to house what Israel calls its health tourists. And the riches of the Dead Sea, the surface, has not yet been scratched. I'll tell you, friend of mine, if I ever saw a prophecy literally fulfilled in response to God's command to a land to yield its fruit when my people return, that land is doing it today. A little land. I hope you remember what I pointed out to you only in the last message, that these people came into this land. It was barren. It was non-productive. It was desolate. It was uninviting. And yet here, within less than 4 decades, it's helping to feed Europe and much of the rest of the world. Only God can make that kind of a land do that. And a man would have to be willfully blind that would believe anything other than that that land is responding to the voice of God spoken to it 2,500 years ago. That's the only answer that can be given. Not only was this land to produce when Israel was returned to it, but there is a distinct prophecy that upon the return of the Jews to the land of Israel, that the nation was also to be restored and to become a marching mighty army. I can think of no nation that completely disappeared from the face of the earth that ever was reestablished as a national power by the same name and the same location again. Can you? But God said this one would be. In the 37th chapter of Ezekiel, virtually the whole chapter is given to this thing. The chapter is introduced by God telling the prophet Ezekiel to go out here into this barren desert and the bleaching sun. He said, Ezekiel, what do you see? He said, a lot of bones bleaching in the sun. He said, Ezekiel, preach to them. You talk about a dry congregation, brother, that'd be it. And Ezekiel preached to them. And Ezekiel said, as he preached to those dry bones, they began to move. And I think a preacher I know would have been moving about the same time. He said, those bones began to move, and they came together. And they formed a skeleton. Upon this skeleton came flesh and sinews, and they became a marching, mighty army. And then God said, Ezekiel, hear this. This is the whole house of Israel. No matter what the Armstrongs say. God says this is the whole house of Israel. All 12 tribes of them. He said, they say we're dead and our hope is lost. We've completely disappeared as a nation and we don't even have a land anymore. But he said, they're going to be resurrected as a nation. They're going to come alive, and they're going to become this marching, mighty army. Well, they've become a nation. The Star of David flies over Bethlehem, Jerusalem, and other cities of Israel today. They have put their military into battle in four wars in the last 30 years, won every one of them, against heavy odds. If you wonder whether or not Israel has become a national people again and whether they have a marching mighty army or not, ask Syria, ask Jordan, ask Egypt. They know that the power is there. And I think the whole world is aware that they could not have done it had God not been involved in these battles. But he brought them back and he sustained them there in spite of their unbelief. The day of repentance is yet to come. Then Israel's nation is back again. Its capital is in Jerusalem again. Its parliament sits. The world today is more concerned about what happens in the Knesset in Jerusalem than what happens in Moscow or Washington, D.C. The ears of the world are attuned to the nation of Israel and to Jerusalem today. They have become a nation. They have become a marching mighty army. They have become a power with which the world must reckon. And yet, for all of this, Israel's day of repentance is yet to come. Her hour of great betrayal is yet to come. But that doesn't change the fact that the land has responded to the voice of God, the cities have responded to the voice of God, and the people have responded to the voice of God. Israel is a nation producing to feed itself and much of the rest of the world according to the word of the Lord. This postscript I would like to add to this message, since I failed to get it in the statistical information I gave on the development of the land of Israel. While we're making a political football out of the use of solar power, Israel is not only one of the greatest users of the sun, it is also one of the first countries to take notice of it as a practical energy source. Leading manufacturers of solar energy equipment have been meeting with growing success in selling their products abroad,
They are currently exporting the solar water heater based on the use of flat black absorbers that face the sun to some 24 countries, ranging from Norway to Australia. And I have been informed that by the summer of 1978, they expect to be able to air condition with solar power.